Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Trana. Thanks so much for listening. Great show this week. Scott Van Pelt from ESPN on the pod. Great conversation with Scott about the awesome Bad Beat segments he does. What goes into them, gives us sort of a behind-the-scenes look, talks about his battle with COVID and actually still having some lingering effects, NFL embracing gambling, a lot of topics covered with SVP. Usually here I plug all the past podcasts. Listen, if you've missed any recently, go into the archives, check them out. We've had some great guests. I don't want to keep you though. I want to get right to SVP because it was great. So just subscribe to the SI Media Podcast. And if you can rate and review, that helps as well. All right, here we go. Scott Van Pelt. All right, joining me now. It's been a while since he's been on the pod. I've been stalking him for months though to come on. Finally got him. Scott Van Pelt from ESPN SportsCenter. Scott, how are you?
I'm here to save your life, Jimmy.
I appreciate that. I needed a good guest this week. I needed someone who I can just relax and shoot the shit with and have fun. So,
well, you've been kind to allow me to say, look, I have 17 other podcasts that I've been asked to join this week, and it's just a bit much. But I always try to make time, and thankfully, I had that time to visit. You're good?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Getting my second vaccine shot tomorrow.
Right on. How do you feel after the first one?
Not one issue at all.
Good.
Listen, this whole thing is insane. Everything about it is insane. You had COVID. Well, we can talk about it a little later. But, you know, my dad is 78, got both shots. Not one problem, not one issue. Felt great. Then there's people my age, even younger, you hear about it, and they're incapacitated for 24 hours. It's wild.
It is. But I mean, if you're able to get both, my mom got both shots, and I'm grateful for that. And it just, I think, particularly for older people, you know, your dad's 78, my mom's 80. I mean, and she's a very youthful person. You would never think, whatever, attach that number to her. But, you know, you just want to give yourself as much of a safety net as you can. So yeah. Good. I'm glad to hear that about your dad.
Yeah. New York, they're doing a good job with the vaccine. So I feel good about it. The first couple of weeks are rough, but they've gotten everything on track and organized, and they're opening it up. So
a year, right? Can you imagine it's been a friggin' year?
It's hard to, but you did a really nice job with your one big thing. I posted it in Train of Thoughts on the 1 year. I hate to use the word anniversary, but for lack of a better word, and you know, listen, obviously this is the least important thing of anything that has to do with COVID, but I am fascinated. I'm curious for your take on this, on how sports and sports fans are going to sort of, not adapt. That's not the right word, bounce back, and how you know, baseball this year, now we'll have some fans in the stands. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the NFL is going to try to fill those stadiums by September when people are vaccinated. Ratings down across the board for everything. People's lives are just completely different. Very interesting to see how sports bounces back.
I am as well. I mean, I think they've largely served, to say purpose is, that's not the right choice of words, but I mean, they've like the NCAA tournament ratings have been, as expected, very good. There's certainly a lot of things through the fall that were off, like events that were staged outside of a normal window of time. And then when you compare those ratings to the time they're normally held, well, you're not comparing apples and apples, you know.
Right.
But that's, I mean, look, frankly, a lot of this is inconsequential what the ratings are. It doesn't matter.
I mean, even from a fan standpoint, like, are you going to be comfortable sitting in a baseball stadium in June wearing a mask?
I mean, I just flew back. I was down in Florida. I flew back, and you wear a mask the whole time. And it's not a long flight to DC, but I mean, it's long enough that they start hurting your ears. Like if you wear glasses, I wear glasses, they fog up. Like, it's just a pain in the ass, man.
Right.
And a plane is a fine environment. Like, imagine like Texas is going to be full capacity. Okay. Well, imagine you go to Texas and it's 93 degrees and it's humid as hell. Like, you're going to wear a mask all day. Like, these are questions. I don't know what people are going to want to do, but I will say this. I do believe that people long to be together, whether it's at movie theaters, restaurants, churches, concert. I think concerts already, certainly games. I think that people will get back there. And I think there's a decent chunk of our profession that will see people at games that aren't wearing masks, and they will fire off tweets that these are horrible people and they're going to make all of us die. And there's lots of police in our profession on social media, which I don't ever think it serves any greater good more than just to point at them and say, shame.
Right. And I want to be clear about something right now. I am pro mask. I wear the mask. I think everybody should wear the mask.
But I'm just talking otherwise.
I'm just talking about the life convenience. Like, it's funny you mentioned it, because I called one of my friends last night, was screaming and yelling like a lunatic, because I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'm getting my second shot Thursday, and they say 7 to 14 days, you're fully vaccinated. And I'm saying, I'm going to do this. You know, I miss restaurants and this. Yeah. And then I thought to myself, wait a second. Now, a restaurant's fine. You go in there, you have to take off your mask when you eat. So, okay. Then I'm like, if I want to go to a movie, I'm fully vaccinated, but I still have to wear the mask. I'm not sitting in a movie theater for 2 hours. I mean, listen, I stopped going to the movies a while ago anyway, just because it's a terrible experience compared to home. But like, it's one of those things, once in a while, you want to go to the movie theater. Now I got to wear a mask. Like you said, you're on the plane, you got to wear the mask, even if you concert. I don't want to go to a concert and have to wear a mask. People need to hear me singing the tunes that are surrounding me. I mean, this is ridiculous.
How's your voice? You got a voice?
Oh my God, the worst, probably the worst voice in America, I would
say. Yeah, but that's just about enthusiasm. You can just sing enthusiastically. I mean, look, there's lots of pockets of our country. I mean, I think you and I live in places where, I mean, it's people wear masks. And then I've gone places where you look around and if you wear a mask, it's like you're a space alien who's come from some place where masks are not part of the sort of social DNA. And it's just, I mean, look, this is, we know all this. We know that the way that we as a country have reacted to this is very different just based on where you are.
And
I think that when it comes to going to places, if you're terrified by this, then don't go places, man.
Right.
I think the world's going to open up. We're going to, you could see lines going down, numbers of shots going up. I mean, we're not going to live this way forever, and we shouldn't.
Right.
I think we should do our best to keep ourselves safe and keep our community safe. That's our responsibility, socially, morally, the whole bit. I don't know. It's just astounding to me, because when we did the March 11th, you know, a lot of us, we were revisiting that night. We were the ones on the air when the whole thing stopped.
Yeah,
and all this.
I remember.
And I mean, I can remember very clearly thinking, man, this is messed up. I can't believe there's no NCAA tournament. I mean, like, by summer, we're good.
Yeah.
Summer 2020, we're fine. Like, for a moment entertaining.
Yeah.
Of course, what it's been. So, you know, but summer 2021 does feel like it's going to be normal. No, not what it was, but not what it was last summer either.
I was kind of fine in summer 2020, because I was at the pool on the beach every day, and you didn't have to wear a mask if you were like in certain areas, and people were, and the great thing about the beach was it was 50% capacity. So nobody was near you if you were on your lounge chair. And again, I'm pro mask, but I also like to complain about the annoyance of the mask. You can do both things. I know in this world now you can't have two. Like, if I'm in the supermarket and I see someone without a mask, I'm like, get your mask on. What are you doing? Yeah. But I also would like to be able to go to the movies when I'm fully vaccinated and not wear a mask. So I'm playing both sides of the fence.
Understood.
I'm inconsistent, but I am pro mask and I am pro complaining about the mask.
And can I complain about one grocery store?
You can complain about anything. I like all complaints on this podcast.
What are we doing with the arrows in the floor?
Oh my God. First of all, no one follows them anyway.
No. And then there's every now and then though, there's arrow truthers, and you get that. Look, this is one way. I'm like, it's a cereal aisle. I just want to get the thing. And there was no one in it. So I came down, but now I'm
committed, one way.
And I've come this way. But then when there are people just blatantly disregarding the arrows and they're all willy nilly, you look at them and maybe in your head, you're like, hey man, this is this way, not that way.
The hypocrisy
can we get the arrows off the floor in a grocery store? Like, we're past that point. Like, we don't need the arrows anymore.
I agree. I totally agree. We definitely don't need the one way aisles in the grocery store. There's no doubt. And I got this weird thing here where the Target by my house is massive. I think all Targets are massive, but there's two entrances and they've had one entrance closed for a year. I assume because they got to count the number of people maybe, but can we open both entrances now? I mean, there's no need for one entrance to be closed. Like, these little things are.
There are things in our lives that I like what you and I are doing right now. I think this will become the norm. Like, just fire up a Zoom link and like businesses won't necessarily be in the same space just because it's cheaper and people have figured out ways to do it. Like Tony Kornheiser, I work down in DC now. Like Tony works from his home. There's a belief that Tony will never set foot in the office in Washington, D.C. again.
Yeah.
And part of that's just the mensch that Tony is, the unique nature of Tony's state of mind and being, that like once he gets comfortable, and that's such a successful show, don't mess with the happy guy. And he's, yeah. If he's happy in his attic in his house, like I think there are lots of Tony Kornheisers out there that have found a happy space and realized, mm-hmm. wait, I prefer this, and it'll be interesting to see what those things are. You just want your Target open, and I just want to be able to go down a one way the wrong way if I just want to grab a box of cereal and get all of my life.
And I know this, you know, I've been home for a year, no SI office in Manhattan. And, you know, there's days where I wish I was in the office just because you want to be out of your house. Maybe you want to see some of your friends, you know. Yeah. And I know the first day I go back, I'm going to be complaining about, oh, my God, this goddamn commute. I'm working from home. You know, there's just no way I'm not going to complain no matter which way it goes.
That's sort of that's kind of your makeup. It's just sort of part of your social DNA. You're going to have to complain.
Let's do a hard left turn here. So one of the reasons I've been badgering you to come on is because you know I've always loved Bad Beats. Uh-huh. I think it's the greatest weekly segment on TV. I post it in my column every week. And I felt like you and Steve took it to even another level this year. Like there were segments that were like 9-11 minutes long. It used to be like 2-4 minutes. I felt like more effort went into it. I felt like we were, and you know what it reminds me of? And this is a compliment. There's going to be assholes out there who think this is an insult because they have this thing with Berman, but this is a compliment. You remind me sometimes of Berman when he would do primetime. So smooth, the little ad libs, never flinch. People don't realize how hard that is to do. Uh-huh. I mean, what Chris Berman did on primetime, I thought was a true gift when he would do those highlights, and you do it with Bad Beats. It's a very similar feel.
I appreciate that very much because I mean, Berman is the godfather. And there is a weird, I don't know how to explain it. Like there's something about the shared misery of what's happening and putting yourself in the place of like, who really had Abilene Christian against Virginia? Well, I got a letter in the mail from a guy with his bet slip. He had $400 on Abilene Christian. And for those that don't know, Abilene Christian was getting 30 some odd points. They got a safety. It was insane. They scored a touchdown. They got a safety. And then because they got the safety, they got the ball back and they throw a pick six on the last play of the game. And Steve's screaming, get on your horse. There's this big lineman that's never got a chance to catch the guy. And we're just, I'm screaming, oh my God, at the top of my lungs. And none of this stuff's written down. It's a true human, like a visceral reaction to what you're seeing, because I didn't have Abilene Christian, but I've lost like that. And so it's the highlight on which you perform more than any others, but it's not like I sit down with any real idea of what the performance is going to be. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, I really wanted to get into, and you know, I hope you don't mind doing this. I wanted to get into like sort of how it's put together. I'm curious about a couple of things, like how long, I mean, you must have so many producers and stuff working on it.
Actually there's one, I want to give him a shout out. Gifford Gould is his name.
All by himself.
And, yeah. Well, I mean, he's one of us. Okay.
Okay.
you need to understand this space to live in it. Somebody that didn't, who hasn't felt like, you know, Mush from Bronx Tale really can't be part of he's not one of us, right?
Get him out of here.
There you go. Now you just can't leave. He sort of curates and has taken it. I think as they've gone to the next level, he deserves as much credit as anybody because like he's always kind of got an eye out. And frankly, Twitter's awful for a million things, but it's become great for our eyes and ears because something horrible happens and immediately like me and Steve have become the Bad Beats. We're your bucket for that. Like we're just your place to scream into the pillow. Like son of a bitch, what just happened? So we're getting these things all the time. And it's no more complicated really, honestly, than an email thread of, oh my God, like Northern Illinois, such and such. Yeah, I saw it. How about this first half of this Nets Suns game? And so throughout a weekend, you're kind of making sure you're keeping tabs on things. And then You come in on Monday, typically. We did it Tuesday, the week of the NCAA tournament, because there were still games going on. But now you've got this mountain of things to sift through. And what we found is there's never not enough. What it really boils down to is, how do we decide which ones we think lend themselves to the most fun presentation? Right. And sometimes it's the video of it. Other times it's just the sheer impossibility of a Texas A&M not scoring 1 point for 9 minutes in a basketball game. And just like, well, how much of that can we show? And then I immediately go, well, hell, all of it. Like, do we just have to show all of the opportunities they had for 9 minutes to not score? And just it piles on top of each other. And the longer it goes, the more absurd it becomes. Right. So yeah. Our producers have been really good about recognizing it's to your point, there are lots of Jimmy Trainers out there, thankfully, that's their favorite thing. So we have enough. Sometimes we have too much. So we just have to figure out, how do we provide it in a semi-concise way? But amazingly, like, we never come in on Monday and go, well, where are the bad beats? No bad beats. Nothing right. Terrible happened. I mean, right. There's always something. But it's really Steve and Gifford and myself. And there are others, but part of our group that'll, you know, hey, did you catch such and such? Jason Beckett, Jason McCallum, rather, J-Mac, was research. Now he's a producer. He's also a guy that's got his eyes out. He's not a gambler per se, yeah. But he's very aware of it, which is helpful. So between J-Mac and Giff, me and Steve, that's kind of what we got.
So take me to the process, if you don't mind. Like, so you guys have an email thread of, you know, get this game. Yeah. And then what's the writing process? I mean, do you write the stuff ahead of time that you're going to say? Is it ad-libbed? It's all ad-libbed.
Well, I mean, like, okay, this is very inside the belt.
Yeah, I want the inside. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you've, anyone that's been in television would understand the idea of what's called a shot sheet. And a shot sheet, very simply, is a big piece of paper sort of turned sideways with 9 boxes in it. All right. And what the way it's spelled out is situation, action, result. So in other words, it's the Nets are 5.5-point favorites. They lead by 7. Harden's at the free throw line, blah, blah, blah. Like, he misses, here comes the other team the other way. Right? That's just a basic whatever. Well, what we have spelled out for us are the situation, the action, and the result. Because ultimately what we're talking about is it's a game, right? So we have a game and a highlight of the game, but our highlight of the game isn't focused as much on the results of the game as the score, final score of the game. The accounting of that's very important. So like the nonsense of Steve yelling some non sequitur and me reacting to that, none of that's written down.
Okay.
And so it's our very kind of honest reaction to it. Cause it is, I mean, it's a sincere pain that right. you have for the moment.
Right.
Cause again, we've all been that poor bastard who's got Abilene Christian.
Well, that is what is one of the most fascinating thing about bad beats, is that if you are someone who likes to place a wager, there is the part of you that you feel like you've seen it all, you've experienced it all. And when you bet, you even sometimes, correct me if I'm wrong, if you agree, you're planning for like, okay, well, this quarterback does this, so this could end with this safe, like, all these things are going through your head when you make a bet, when you're watching a game, you're trying to cover a spread. And yet when you watch bad beats, you're still like, I cannot believe that happened. You can believe it and right. you can't believe it at the same time. That's sure. the beauty of the bad beat.
And anyone that bets is does so believing this is going to win. You wouldn't do it. But also with the clear understanding that something horrible might happen. And anyone that gambles also spends the end of a game, if it's close, expecting the horrible thing to happen.
Right.
And like, if you've ever been, if you've ever played cards, like you've got that friend, like if you're playing blackjack and you got a buddy that's not playing and you get 20 and the dealer's got like a 3, and there's always that dope that's like, oh man, you're going to win. You're like, please shut up. Because now it's 3 and they flip a 2 and then they pull a 6 and then there's a queen. And now you just want to punch your friend in the face because that person's not a gambler. They don't understand. You don't speak of it until you're being paid. Same thing watching a game. Like if, you're up 20 or you're given 10. Well, you're good. You're going to lose. I mean, whoa. Let's just, you don't know. Then the next thing you know, somebody hits two threes as a technical and you just, and you're looking at your friend like, how could you say this? How could you ever speak of a game being a win until it's a win? So I think that there's a big part of that in Bad Beats too.
Absolutely.
And I keep going back to Virginia and Abilene Christian just because It was the one that was such a seared in people's brains that like once they like got this safety, and for people who didn't see it, like supposedly Virginia ran a play from a play sheet where the guy called it in and it should have been like a victory formation, but there's not a lot of time left and they're throwing double passes in the end zone and you're looking at this going, what the fuck are you doing? And then they got the safety and now Abilene Christian, you're going to win. There's no way you could lose except you get the ball back after the safety. Then naturally they throw a pick six on the last play of the game. Well, all those things had to happen exactly that way and only that way for you to lose. But if you had Abilene the whole time you're watching, you're just waiting to figure out what that's going to be. And so that's one example of something that happens on a weekly basis. And for that, we are grateful, and we're grateful for people like you that are out there going, let's see what happened this week.
It is fun when you watch games with a group of people and some are betting and some are not betting and don't know anything about betting, because you know, you can have money on a team and you're rooting for them in some situations to kick a field goal instead of a touchdown because you want a certain number because the other team could come back. And if they get a 2-point, and the person who doesn't bet, they're like, if you bet them, why are you rooting for them to kick a field goal instead of a touch? Like the insanity that you go through at the end of games is only gamblers have that bond with each other that they understand the ridiculous things you're rooting for.
Sure. And looking at it from, you know, from the outside, from the space of the person who doesn't do that, you think I'd be so much happier if I just didn't know, you know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
They're not the psychotic people we are, but it's like we're too far down the road, you know.
Right.
We're too committed to the life at this point to have some epiphany and stop.
Yeah, like you told. I mean, I have one of my best friends from college. I mean, we've been friends now 25 years. When we were in college, I'll never forget it. He bet an over on a Yankees Mariners game, and it was like 5-3 in the second inning. I'm like, you got it. It's over. And of course, this, you know, it ends 5-3, and I hear about it now, 25 years later.
And you should, because you're the asshole that said he was going to win the bet.
Yeah.
In the second inning, you got it. Yeah. You can't. You know, you can't do that. You feel good. You feel like we're on a good path here, but let's wait, because all of a sudden now it's bottom nine, still 5-3, and Jimmy Trainor, who's the mush?
I still hear about it. So you and Steve. No rehearsals, you don't know what he's going to say. He doesn't know what you're going to say. It's amazing. No,
and that's
amazing.
That's where we just benefit from.
Great chemistry.
Well, he's such a great audience because he laughs easily, but sincerely. And he's got a smile that you can kind of feel. But he's also got that just acidic edge to him. And this fury that's genuine about how could this be happening? And he lays out, which is, you know, he kind of lets me go. And then I try to get out of the way and let him go, because like there are many times that he's, to me, he's sort of the star. He's the engine that's moving us forward in that segment. So I just need to kind of get some of the bookkeeping out of the way so he can go off on a tangent.
It's a gift. It really is, the way you guys can do that and play off of each other.
I appreciate it. And I know Steve said this to me, and I would just say it to you, like we appreciate that you are as vocal a proponent of the segment and always put it in
Love it.
Train of thoughts. We're grateful for that.
I got to say, you've mentioned the Abilene Christian Virginia. My all time favorite one, I think, was 2019. I don't remember the details, but it was a Mountain West game in the snow. I think it was maybe BYU. I don't remember. And
Wyoming.
And they declined a holding penalty. That was, to me, the all-timer with the declining of the holding. I don't remember the situation, but I remember the declining of the holding penalty, just throwing everything into uproar.
Right, because there's a touchdown and they called a hold, but if they wouldn't have got the ball back if they took the penalty. But so they decline it, and as a result, you lose. Again, one
that's
of those
the
things,
old-timer to me.
Of course
old-timer
it is.
Right there.
Because you've never seen that. But these right. things happen just to give us content and just to give people like you and me another page in the book of remarkable things that couldn't happen but did.
I thought there was a big step here last week when the NFL announced their new TV deals. And that was a very nice deal for ESPN. You have to be happy about that. But Goodell said it might be time to start incorporating some gambling things into the coverage. I thought that was do I think that you're going to have Steve Levy and you know, Brian Greasy say, oh, here, the Chiefs are -4? No, but if they can sort of do the Al Michaels thing without, you know, having to shake because they think they're going to get a call, I think that would be nice for moving into the future here.
I've been fairly vocal about this forever, that this is, of course, how it's going to go. It's gambling is this evil, this plague against humanity in the eyes of the league. And then, oh, well, the Raiders they're in Vegas. Well, come out and see a game, maybe a show. Don't play cards or roll the dice or anything. Just come to Vegas. Come on. And now teams have partnerships with gambling companies. And the revenue, as is the case with everything in the NFL, the revenue that they would generate from this space would be exponentially more than any other league. And so over time, Roger Goodell, this is a brilliant businessman. And right. his league is this juggernaut that they benefit from a careful consideration of what to do. But they benefit. And it was always and inevitably going to end up somewhere there. And I've always said as much. And, yeah. you know, you mentioned the Al Michaels, you know, and well, that's overwhelming. And Al, tongue in cheek, that's how it's had to be. I just think you just have to trust people to do it in a way where you're acknowledging it. Like when the Browns and the Ravens end Monday Night Football and there's that last play of the game and there's that safety and I come on and I came on and I shrugged and I said nothing for a good
yes,
long while.
Yes,
for a good long while, because you know you can't just scream bad beat. But right. to me, it's just way funnier if you play it that way in that little moment, because everyone is in on the joke. So
that's funny.
I think when everyone's in on the joke, it's just foolish. It's foolish. It's foolish to just not acknowledge it. In my opinion.
It's funny because I just Googled Al Michaels, Scott Van Pelt, Jimmy Trina, because I wanted, because Al was on this podcast over the summer and he said something very complimentary. I wanted to get the exact phrase, but the way he called you like the master of the bad beat or something like that, or what you do is an art form, I think he said. So I wanted to get the exact quote, but I put that in and the first thing that came up was the column I wrote December 15th, ESPN Scott Van Pelt reacts to Ravens wild cover against the Browns. That was the shrug.
Right. Cause and in that moment I'm thinking, what can I do visually? Cause it's just all I am in is like in a little box, like right before the thing comes on. What can I do that says, well, we all know what happened without saying we all know what happened?
That's what's so childish about it is you can come on ESPN at let's say 11:30 and get right into a bad beat. Right. But at 11:26, Steve Levy can't mention that it's a bad beat. It's like, you know, can we grow up here a little bit, please?
That's what I'm saying. It just doesn't make a ton of sense. But clearly that the direction that this is going is just as this becomes legal more places and as, you know, the league and teams are going to participate in the legality of it, then it becomes something that we can just address more directly than having to go kind of around the barn.
This one is out of left field, but I mentioned the new television deals with the NFL. So ESPN, they're getting flex schedule from week 12 on, which is tremendous for them. They're going to get a London game on a Sunday morning exclusive on ESPN Plus. Any interest or desire to ever call a game?
No, it's not my thing. I don't. And people have been nice, like people in the business that are friends of mine, like, oh, you should call a game. You know, you'd be right up your alley or whatever. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. I don't know. The mechanics of it and whether it's Michaels, Tirico, Nance, Buck, Levy, like, and I could keep going, like the people I watch who I think have such great command of what it is. Jimmy, I wouldn't know the first thing. I wouldn't know, like, how do I lay out? Is it down in distance? Am I identifying the tackler? Like I do golf. Okay. And you know, it's the running joke about golf, like my buddy Steve Sands from the, you know, NBC and the Golf Channel. It's like stealing money. It's just like, you just lay out, say nothing, listen to the clubs rattle, and then say to 12. That's it, to 12, like over to 10. You know, it's anyone could do golf, anyone, as I prove. And so I think I understand that and the tempo and the pace of that. Calling a football game, like, I start to say I'll never.
Yeah.
And I say, and I have this post-it note at my desk that I've referenced a billion times. It says, I will never work at ESPN. And I keep it here as a reminder to not say the thing I won't do.
Right.
I just can't imagine what would ever have me call a game, because it's nothing I aspire to, because I don't know how to do it.
And obviously what you do well is SportsCenter. What is it been like this past year doing that every night? In the beginning there were no games, then the games came back. Did you have to do anything differently? Did you feel like, okay, listen, everyone's in a, you know, bad mood here, let me try to uplift? Was there any, or do you just do it the way you've always done it and you don't change anything?
Well, I mean, from last March 11th through the middle of early July, when we had like our break, we always have a break right after the NBA finals and free agency. Yeah. We did from March to then, there's no sports and no games. Right. And it was, I mean, I don't want to be dramatic, but like there were times when I was just mentally so done. And whether it was my wife or my agent, Sandy Montag, or Mike McQuaid, who's sort of my guy at ESPN, I don't know what his title is, but he's beyond producer, coordinating producer. He's a person that keeps me sane. Like between all those people, I had to lean into them on occasion to just say, like, I cannot do this again. I can't come in and ask Woj, what's the plan? I can't ask Jeff Passan, what do we think? I can't. We luckily had the Jordan doc, and we created a segment then called Senior Night, which was actually a really cool thing, an offshoot of the seasons that ended, where we were actually able to acknowledge teams that we wouldn't have otherwise even known existed, which was a really cool thing that happened. But then when games came back, like when I came back post break in the summer, thankfully we had baseball and football was around the corner. We weren't sure how it was going to work, but it did. And hold on a second. My wife's calling me. I have to tell her I'm talking on a podcast. Hey, buddy, I'm talking to a famous man named Jimmy Train. I'll call you right back, okay?
Okay.
I love you, buddy.
I love you.
Bye. I told you, famous. I lied to my son.
That's listen, I need younger readers and, you know, podcast listeners. So get them trained early.
All right. But I guess when we came back, you know, we just did games. Like, you know, like I think you and I have talked about this. Like the days of what SportsCenter was when it was pre bottom line, pre Twitter, pre whatever, is very different than it is now. But what I think we've found, and I hope what we've created, is a show where even if you might be aware of the result, we're just this familiar companion, and how we're going to show you and talk about what happened is something that might be appealing to you. And so when games came back, we treated it like, thank God we've got games, you know? And you know, on March 11th, I went on I went on with Max Kellerman. He's like, you know, what are you guys going to do on this year anniversary? I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to show a shit ton of games because we can. Be grateful for what the diversion are, because that's ultimately what sports are. They're our greatest connector. They're the best diversion. And they're not real life. And we don't treat them as such, but we appreciate what we get to do. So, you know, it's been strange. We're down in D.C. now. It's a very small group. It's me, Steve, and my guy McQuaid, who I mentioned. That's it. That's what we've got from Connecticut. And it's like we're good. Like we're just trying to keep on keeping on. I mean, like I assume that over the course of my time here, something will evolve. Some next version of something will happen, because it always does. And I have no idea what it is now. Maybe it is still this. I don't know. But it's been a fascinating year of just having nothing, getting it back, appreciating it, even though it doesn't look or feel like we're used to it feeling. We're grateful for that. And I do think, to the point that you and I were talking about earlier, like come summer and then hopefully by fall, it's going to feel like mostly it felt like. I think you're going to see full stadiums all over the place, and that's going to freak some people out. But, you know,
I think outside you're okay. I'm a doctor. I shouldn't, you know, but I think there's a huge difference between outside and inside. So I think
I agree with that. There are some that don't. And again, I have to respect it that, but I just, you know.
Well, when did you end up getting Corona? What month was that?
A couple weeks before Christmas.
And how long did you not feel well for?
I never felt bad.
Oh, you had the loss of smell, if I'm not mistaken.
Smell and taste. I still can't taste.
Really?
Not much, which is a horror show. I couldn't taste an apple one day. And it was like, oh man. And I had my back was achy. And so it's like my back was achy. And all of a sudden I couldn't taste. And I'm like, oh no. And I went and got a rapid test. It's so weird. I'll never forget. It was a snowy day where it turned into like ice and rain. It's miserable. I'm sitting on my couch. I get the text back from the facility, and there's just this big red positive. And my wife and my kids walk in, and I just gave her the like hand sign across the throat, like, nah, it's no good. And our family for years has had a house at this place called Bethany Beach, Delaware. And I just said, I'm leaving. I just went and sat by myself and waited for time to pass. I never had a fever, gratefully. I never had a cough, gratefully. The only thing I had was this smell and taste.
Yeah, I'd rather have a cough and a fever for like 2 weeks and keep my smell.
Well,
and taste.
Well, it's awful because there was one thing that still tastes the same to me even now, and that's peanut M&Ms. And so I just eat family sized bags of peanut M&Ms because it's the one thing that tastes correct. All these weird things like that, these so savory bizarre pastas with beautiful tomato and onion and whatever that should have this flavor. I don't get it. I don't get that flavor. And I've had so many people tell me that they get like these windows of taste back, but like you need like, say there's like four or five like flavor profiles that go into making something taste like something. I only get two of them. So I get this really incomplete kind of taste that I should have, and it's not the same and it doesn't taste good. And so it's just,
that's such a mind.
Yes.
F word.
Yes. I didn't know.
I was trying to think of something else. Yeah. It was
sorry,
like, that,
I'm sorry.
No. I was going to say it. And I couldn't even think, I couldn't think of the F word, but that's, yes, that is one that will really screw with your brain there.
Yes. And so it's and I've read everything there is to read, and I've done all the like burning orange and brown sugar. And then there's this doctor in like, literally my wife did this to me the other day. That I found a news story from like Phoenix of some doctor where you put your hand on your chest and you push your olfactory thumping and somebody flicks you on the back of the head. And my wife's like, I'm supposed to flick your back in the back of your head. I'm like, just do it. So she did.
And then you eat something and you still don't taste.
Of course I don't.
But you got your smell back.
Mostly, like I can say, and that doesn't
you
make
got sense. Screwed twice. You kinda, because you because could have had cough and fever for a week, kept your smell and taste. You got screwed once, then you lose smell and taste, and you get smell back and not taste. You got screwed twice.
Which I don't understand, because typically, if you can't smell, you can't taste. But now I can smell, but I don't have the full, and I don't know what to do. Like there isn't some pill to take or shot to get that's going to suddenly wake my taste buds back. And so now I'm in this kind of wait and see mode. And every day it's like, all right, well, can I taste this? And it's like crunch, crunch, crunch. Not really. And it sucks.
Are you a big food? I mean, you're a thin guy. Are you a big food guy? Are you like, I mean, obviously me, if I can't taste, my life is over, but what about you?
Well, I mean, it's not great. I mean, eating is one of the pleasures of life. And I mean, I'm a kind of a creature of habit. I eat a lot of the sort of the same things, but you know, like strawberries, I kind of have that flavor. So that's good. I eat a lot of strawberries.
Tom Brady would not be happy with you right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tom, you do whatever makes you happy. And I mean,
what do you miss the most? Like if you could taste something tonight, what would your meal be?
Just a really, really like a Van Pelt, people don't know, but I'm Italian. Like, so I have like the Italian side of me. I miss like a nice, like cacio e pepe, just like a nice pasta, nice creamy Alfredo, just like that peppery, that creamy where you get like the, I'm giving Guy Fieri a shout, like Flavor Town here. I'm missing the creamy and the salty and the, you know what I mean? Yeah. I miss that. I would love just something basic like that. Just a nice sort of an Alfredo-y peppery kind of a pasta. And you eat in the consistency. That's the thing that anybody that has dealt with this will tell you, like this consistency is telling your brain that there's this flavor, that you know what it is, but you just aren't experiencing it. And it's just, it's
crazy.
So strange.
Yeah.
And I'm just, I mean, it's been 3 months plus where I haven't been able to really taste. And so I just, like, other people I know that have had this thing, it's like, how are you doing? I'll check in on them. Hey, how are you doing? And like, I wake up every morning and I shove the bar of soap up my nose to see, like, can I smell today? Nope. And you're just like, well, your day gets off to a lousy start.
Right,
like, well,
right.
Okay, not today. I don't know what the thing's going to be that makes it happen. But look,
yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of laughing about this, but I'm grateful that that's what it was. I mean, there are people that lose the ability to breathe, you know? I mean, I didn't lose that ability. And to me, it was as mild as it could possibly be, other than this odd lingering annoyance. But
Back to what we said at the top about the vaccines. Even when you get every case is so different, every person is so different, everyone reacts so differently. I appreciate all the time you give me. One last thing before I let you go, because I just wanted to get this in. One of the things during quarantine that a lot of people did, myself included, was binge Ted Lasso. You had a nice cameo in Ted Lasso. That good show, and was that a fun experience for you?
I'll tell you what was so neat about it was that. These things happen, you know, fairly often where, you know, there's like, I got to be in Creed. Okay. I was grateful that they asked, like you film, you know, I just did air quotes, but I mean, I don't want it to sound like I'm overstating what I did. Like you film a scene, but all it really is you, I'm already on the set to do the show.
Right.
There's some copy I'm supposed to do and you read it and you have to sign something as cause you have to be like in the union and whatever else. And like the amazing thing, Jimmy, about that is like out of nowhere, like something will come and I'm like, what's this? Oh, it's a check.
Yeah.
Cause I was in this movie.
Yeah.
And
royalties.
Understood. But I don't think that way. And
what's
I mean,
your,
it's not
what's
like,
your Creed royalty check? How much is the Creed royalty?
That's
check?
What I was just going to say. Like it's, I mean, it's, I don't know. It's say it's $1,100 or something.
Oh,
it's,
okay. So you're
like, well, cause it, and then you look at it and you go, well, why am I getting this money? Well, cause it ran on this and this and this and this. And then I'm thinking, imagine you're like the star of this. What kind of check do you get? And I didn't do anything. Like I shot a thing. I forgot I did it. I was grateful to be asked. And then every now and then, like, somebody, oh, you were in Creed. I'm like, oh, yeah, that thing. Yeah, that's right. I did that thing. Anyway,
imagine what Jerry Seinfeld's royalty check looks like.
I cannot. That's why he owns the Hamptons. And, maybe he was going to get into one of the Mets.
I would love to see the Jerry Seinfeld royalty check.
I cannot imagine. Yeah. So all of this is a kind of like a way of framing that these things kind of happen. And I don't typically get asked about them, or somebody will just say, hey, you know, there's this thing for Creed. Do you want to do it? And you're like, well, sure. It's not heavy lifting and that'd probably be cool. Well, in this case, like somebody told me, hey, Sudeikis wants to talk to you. I'm like, well, about what? And like, well, he wants you, there's something and they're going to doing a show and they want to know if you'll do it. I'm like, well, just tell him. Yeah. He's like, well, no, he just wants to talk to you. I was like, okay, fine. So one afternoon I'm just sitting in my office and it's like me and Jason Sudeikis are on the phone. And I mean, he's a talented, successful guy whose work I appreciate.
So good on the show.
And he really is. And I come to find out that he and their group really feel like it's important for the show to begin in a certain way. And they want to know if I'll do it. I said, well, of course. And then we just had this lovely conversation. It was during the middle of the pandemic and it was kind of about life and philosophies of life and being grateful and kind of throwing that out into the universe and blah, blah, blah. And I just was like, what a cool guy. And what a neat thing that he cared enough about this to actually have this conversation.
Yeah.
And so I did it. And then it's like all these other things, you kind of forget about it. And then the show comes out and I mean, I'm not in the show. I had a scene in the show.
Right.
I just think the show is phenomenal and it's so unexpected. Like it moves you in ways you're just totally unprepared to be moved because you go into it thinking this is some slapsticky thing. Well, no, this is about life and grief and stuff and heavy things. And I just, I'm so like, I sent a note to them the other day because they won another slew of awards and I'm just so happy for them.
Yeah.
And it always comes back to him thanking me for helping like, really helped the launch the idea of it. I'm just thinking, I did a 20-second scene at the beginning, but what's wild is how many people will just random people or friends like, man, you were in Ted Lasso. And now it's like, yeah, no big deal. I'm just, what I do.
A lot of people watch that, you know, it got good word of mouth and, you know, good social media buzz, which helps in that situation.
What that's the best way to have anything happen now. Like this it's an Apple TV thing. It people see it and they immediately latched onto him. And then that's the best way for anything to succeed in this world now is for that to happen. Like a bit of buzz, people you like it and you're like, well, it must be good or they wouldn't tell me it was good.
Yeah. I was really blown away by him. I mean, listen, this is one of the problems with like social media and podcasts. Like if you see, the world isn't like you like someone or you don't like someone. Like I didn't dislike Jason Sudeikis, but I wouldn't say I was like a Jason Sudeikis fan. It was just, he was a guy who I enjoyed on Saturday Night Live. And like, that was the extent of it. I didn't have any sort of, and I watched the show and I'm like, this is an unbelievable performance by Jason Sudeikis. Like I was more impressed with him than the show almost because, and he's getting every award now. So, you know,
and he should
deserves it. Yeah.
And you know, the thing I always said about Tiger Woods in sports is that he made you feel right. Like, the thing about athletes and sports at their absolute best is they make you feel something. They connect you to an emotion. And the thing about Jason Sudeikis and Ted Lasso is that he largely is the vehicle to make you feel. And you're just not prepared for that in a little 30-minute show that, you know, you thought was about a soccer coach, which it kind of is, but it's not. It's really not that in the end.
Right. Since you mentioned him and you're the big golf guy, we'll end it with this. Is Tiger ever going to play golf again?
I honestly don't know. And I have had zero interaction with other than, you know, you just sort of sent a message out and just to join with the like queue of people to say, hey, I'm hopeful that you're okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. And anything else is just a waste of your time. I haven't got a clue. I don't know how the extent of the injuries. I mean, he was coming off another back surgery. I don't know how hobbled this will leave him. It sounded pretty bad. But I mean, having gotten to know him for many, many years, and like everyone, knowing his kids and what they mean to him, which is like all of us and our kids, you just wanted to be okay. I'm happy he's here. Like, I mean, my God, you see the car and it rolls over. I mean, you know, it could have been far worse. So the golf's inconsequential.
Yeah.
If it happens, awesome. If not, he gave us more than most.
If it happens, about getting content. I mean, that will be a code red for the sports media if he comes back and plays in a tournament, that's for sure.
It'll be a while. It would have to be a long time if so. The one thing on his side is, you know, is golf allows you to compete far longer than anything else. I mean, obviously he already won in his 40s, won the Masters. So there's time. It's just, I'm totally in the dark on the extent of the injuries as they would relate to the ability to get out and ever play again.
Oh, well, I appreciate you coming on and giving me so much time. I know you love coming on podcasts, so I hope this isn't too painful.
There are too many podcasts, Jimmy.
Oh, my God. It's absurd. It's absurd.
Should there be like a test that you have to pass or something? Like what should we do to think? And maybe I wouldn't pass it, and then I wouldn't have to bother people.
Yeah.
How much do you hate the booking process? How much do you hate it?
It destroys my life.
Right.
Well, there's two things I hate. When I do this, like sitting here speaking to you, I love that. The booking is so stressful, and again, because part of it's me. I don't want to talk to everybody, and I don't want to talk to people that are promoting something. I don't want to talk to people that have a book out or a movie out. Not my thing. I don't want to talk to the people. You know, the same comedians do this. You know. I don't want to mention names because every time I do that, someone says it. But you know, what's the guy?
I get it. No,
who's the guy who does it? What's the sports show? Oh God, I can't think of his name now. But even you know, Rob Riggle. Like I got it. He's on every podcast I could get. It's not what I want to do. So finding people that I want to speak to is difficult. And then, like you said, when I go on Twitter and promote the podcast, which I do a lot because you have to, you just feel like the biggest douche because there's 9 billion podcasts. It's like, how does anything break through anymore?
I don't know, but I'm with you in this. Like this part of it is the fun part. Like, cause by the way, I would have just said no, if I didn't want to talk to you, I enjoy this part of it. It's just all the rest of it. That's you just like, oh God. And you know, you get to know these people and you just don't want to bother them. Like, I don't want to bother people. Right. I don't want to hassle somebody that's like that. And then you're trying to get the person, you think, ooh, this will be good so that I can tweet it and then people will want to listen to it. Like, I have a television show at night. I got to deal with that too. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't, this other stuff.
Well, right.
But someday the podcast will probably be all I do, you know? Like, right. There'll come a time where that'll be the only thing I want to do.
And, right, because I still write every day. So for me, that's the priority. And then I have, you know, but, you know, maybe it's backwards. I don't know. But it's also, again, you know, like I didn't want to talk about the NFL deals this week anymore. Like I've talked about it for like 3 weeks in a row. Like how many times are you going to talk about
who's
the NFL?
Who's that interesting to?
What was that?
Who is that interesting to?
You'd be surprised. I mean, you know what it's interesting about? I'll tell you what's interesting about it. I've mentioned this. Whenever I've talked about the NFL TV deals and everything, of course, that happened last week was about CBS, NBC, Fox. All anyone wants to know is what's going on with Sunday Ticket. There is a major, major interest and thirst from NFL fans about what is, you know, people don't want it exclusively on DirecTV anymore. So that's the question I keep getting, even when I'm talking about the other stuff.
Yeah. And I wasn't saying they weren't. I just want to know who's, what is the audience appetite for, like how much money people are paying. I can see that because so much of the way we consume the NFL, I think, is through that lens of that particular platform. And I know Jimmy Pitaro has been open about that. I mean, I would think that'd be a massive home run.
Yeah, that's right. Everyone wants ESPN Plus to get Sunday Ticket. So let's put in the word. Let's get on that. Do that for the fans.
I'm all for it. Like, give me that. I'll just show up and, you know, although like what Siciliano and Hanson do, like those guys are great. I'm not trying to steal anybody's spot or whatever else. Mm-hmm. I just,
we're ready for the SVP Sunday Ticket.
I don't know.
What is it called? What's it called? Red Zone.
I got to go to the bathroom, man. Like I can't, I drink entirely too much Diet Coke to not have to hit the head every once in a while. Like, here, we're going to show you some stuff. I'll be back in a few. No one cares. They don't need me anyway.
They could just leave a game up and go off to the bathroom and come back. That's all.
That's fine. Just lay out. But it's good to catch up. I'm glad you're well. Shout out to your pop. I'm happy to hear you got the shots and everybody out there stay safe and all that rest of that.
Same to you and the family. And I hope you get your taste back and keep the bad beats coming.
Right on. Thanks for being a supporter of that. I appreciate you, man.
I appreciate it. Thanks. Take care, Scott. All right. That wraps it up for this week's episode of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My thanks to Scott Van Pelt. Always great to chat with him. If you've missed any recent episodes of the SI Media Podcast, check them out in the archive. Last week, Sports Business Journal's Austin Karp was on to talk about the new NFL TV deals. 2 weeks ago, Ryan Rucco and Brian Stelter on the 1 year marking of the pandemic and how it affected sports and the media. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk was on a few weeks ago. So check all of those out. Subscribe and rate and review for the SI Media Podcast. It helps tremendously. All right. Again, thanks to Scott Van Pelt. Hope you enjoyed it. And we'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast. Take care.